Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, July 29th, 2025. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, front and center, large photograph of a pig with his head in a bucket. Not kidding. And the headline reads, change is a hoof. And this is Champaign Park District. As Centennial Park's prairie farm nears its 60th year, consultants are considering its location, possibilities for year-round programming, and more. This article is written by Jana Wiersema. She can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. The article is based out of Champaign. Every year around Memorial Day, a local park amenity opens its gates for the summer and invites the community to come and see a variety of animals, including pigs, chickens, rabbits, turtles, alpacas, goats, and miniature horses. Prairie Farm, which first opened at Centennial Park in 1966, sees approximately 10,000 to 13,000 visitors during its summer season, says Champaign Park District Executive Director Sarah Sandquist. When asked why the facility has lasted so long, she replied, "First of all, it's a fun place to be. It's unique and its setting offers educational opportunities for kids, a place to go for families to bring their kids. Everyone loves animals. It's been just a really important piece of history within Champaign." As the farm approaches its 60th anniversary, the Park District has hired Indiana-based Firmwork, spelled F-R-M-W-R-K, Firmwork Planning and Design, to lead a master planning process for the facility to evaluate possibilities such as renovations, expanding the farm to be open year-round, adding a satellite site even relocating the farm altogether. "We haven't really had a master plan established for Prairie Farm," Sandquist said. "We've had a couple iterations of thoughts, but to have a formal master plan is a new thing for this site, so it kind of just felt like it was time." According to Sandquist, Prairie Farm's creation was made possible by a gift from local attorney John L. Franklin, who gave $15,000 in honor of his late wife, Margaret, to create a house and a farm space that would highlight our agricultural history within the area. The Park District supplemented the donation with $10,000. Let me continue on just one moment. Franklin said at the dedication ceremony that his wife had believed that caring for animals had a way of engendering kindness and unselfishness in children. Sandquist noted that while there have been some changes to Prairie Farm over the years, such as the construction of a farmhouse in 1975 and the removal of a slide that had previously been attached to a silo structure, the site hasn't seen any major renovations to date. The decision to seek a master plan was also tied to the Park District's purchase of a 4-acre parcel at the southeast corner of Windsor and Staley Roads for $800,000 in August of 2024. The site, formerly part of the Zond family homestead, is the final piece of Zond Park and could potentially serve as a satellite location for Prairie Farm, Sandquist said. "There's some grain silos, and then there's three buildings that are on site," she said. "And Firmwork is taking into consideration the status of those buildings and if there would be potential to utilize them in future plans. They're all in pretty good shape. At present, the Park District is using the site for storage. There's also been some discussion about relocating Prairie Farm to the Zond property, though Sandquist noted that the current site has certain advantages, including its central location, access to public transit, and proximity to other Park District amenities." On the other hand, the existing facilities are limited in terms of providing enough space for animals to roam and graze, she said. Additionally, Walzand Park has restrooms, Prairie Farm uses portables. Sandquist wrote in a report to the Park District Board that the need for site analysis was one of several key themes that emerged during an initial kickoff and vision meeting with Firmwork in June. The firm is also examining the possibility of having Prairie Farm open year-round with expanded programming. We've seen success and interest from the community and education around agriculture, Sandquist said, adding that the Park District sees an opportunity to expand beyond the current seasonal operations and cater to field trips during the school year. Other possibilities include winter markets, gardening workshops, and community partnerships, especially with the University of Illinois, she wrote in her summary of the vision meeting. However, she noted that in order to make the idea viable, Prairie Farm would need restrooms, space for indoor programming, enhanced electrical and water infrastructure, and dedicated storage. Firmwork noted that the Zand property and its existing facilities could potentially be used for winter activities or as rentable event space. Aside from select events such as Fright Night in October and the Winter Nights lighting display in December, Prairie Farm is generally only open a few months out of the year. The current season began May 24th and ends September 1st. Sandquist said admission is free during the farm's operating hours, which are 1 to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. We have specific time in the afternoon every day for animal interactions and more intimate experience with the animals, allowing participants to come into some of the pens and do some feeding and some additional animal care, she said. This offering is also free. Additionally, the farm plays host to a variety of park district programs and events, including some activities that are free, such as story time at the farm and others that have registration fees, such as Pee Wee Farmers. The site offers birthday rentals and paid group tours. Prairie Farm is primarily supported by taxpayer dollars and donations, Sandquist said. I think we'd probably like to do as much as we can to keep the entry fee as free, and in the future explore corporate sponsorship and expanding our donation base to help support those efforts, she said. Furthermore, there is a desire among Park District staff and officials to emphasize the farm's original purpose. While Prairie Farm began as an educational farm focused on local agriculture, it has primarily functioned as a petting zoo in recent years, Sandquist wrote in her report. Stakeholders agreed that revitalizing its educational mission is critical. She told the News Gazette that the Park District commissioners, who had a preliminary discussion with Firmwork during a board meeting last week, likewise agreed that agricultural education is the cornerstone of Prairie Farm. Fostering that, especially for young children, is really what we provide, she said, and that mission can be expanded in ways to take into account new technology in farming and sustainability with agricultural practices. According to Sandquist, Firmwork is expected to present some initial concepts to the board this fall for feedback and refinement, and the master plan is expected to be complete by late 2025 or early 2026. She is unsure when the Park District might pursue a Prairie Farm improvement project, and noted that they are currently in the middle of a district-wide feasibility study, a community survey, and an ADA audit and transition plan. A lot of these plans are going to all finalize right around the same time and will provide opportunities for some bigger discussions about what's next for the district and how this Prairie Farm project fits into the priority list, Sandquist said. And there's three photographs that accompany this article. One is of an older photograph, grassy field, or actually it's a recent photograph, I take that back, and a few silos and open space. The caption reads, "In August 2024, the Champaign Park District purchased the last parcel of the Zand Family Homestead," that's Z-A-H-N-D, Zand Family Homestead, which is located at the southeast corner of Windsor and Staley Roads, officials have discussed moving Prairie Farm to the Zand site. There's also a nice sunny day photo of the exterior of the farm, and this one is dated. The caption reads, Prairie Farm opened at Champaign's Centennial Park in 1966, in large part thanks to a $15,000 gift given to the Champaign Park District by attorney John L. Franklin in honor of his late wife, Margaret. And then, as I mentioned, when I first began the article, there's a photograph front and center of a large pig with his head in a bucket, and there's little kids around the photo or looking at the pig through a fence. And the caption reads, a poor scene resident of Centennial Park's Prairie Farm in Champaign enjoys its bucket of food Monday as young visitors explore the site. That photo is taken by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. Oh, and there's one more photo of a little boy. It looks like feeding an animal through a fence or just petting its nose and snout. That caption reads, Bentley Richards, 3 of Champaign, pets one of Prairie Farm's ponies on Monday. He was with his twin brother, Owen. Those photos are all taken by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette and Jana Wiersema of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Unit 4 School Board, majority favoring in-house option versus a search. Acting leader offers stability and continuity. This article is written by Jeff D'Alessio. He can be reached at his email address, jdalessio@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. On second thought, maybe Unit 4 doesn't need to hire an interim superintendent while it searches for a full-time successor for Sheila Boozer. The better bet, the majority of the Champaign School Board said aloud Monday night, would be to stick with its acting superintendent, Dan Casillas, for the upcoming school year. We're out of time. School starts in 2 weeks. I'm not interested in any more upheaval than we've had, said Amy Armstrong, who turned toward Casillas and added, I've been incredibly impressed with Mr. Casillas, your responsiveness, your updates, your kindness, and your approach to our families. During a meeting at which the board voted unanimously to hire Georgetown, Texas-based JG Consulting to assist in its search for a permanent superintendent, President Tony Bruno raised the question about whether the process agreed upon 2 months ago, appoint an in-house acting superintendent, then hire an interim superintendent with a search firm's help, should be tweaked. For now, it's only a discussion item. But should it come up for a vote, 4 of 7 members, Armstrong, Fatima Ahmed, Christy Arnold, and Betsy Holder, were strongly in favor of letting the district's executive director of facilities and services continue in that role. Bruno didn't weigh in. Justin Michael Hendricks and Grace Kang both expressed a desire to stick with the original plan. And just one moment for a continuation of that. These articles aren't quite linking up. Just one moment. Among the other reasons cited for keeping Casillas in charge, that's C-A-S-I-L-L-A-S in charge, he'd bring continuity to a district that just in the last 2 months has cut ties with its superintendent, hired 3 new building principals, and received a 91-page audit of all things special education with 100-plus recommendations to put in place. Stability and continuity is what we need right now, Ahmed said. A placeholder, as Holder called it, would likely come from the outside, come at a significant cost, and come with restrictions given that the likely pool of candidates, retired Illinois superintendents, are limited by their pension requirements to working 100 days per fiscal year. Casillas' revised compensation agreement calls for him to receive a $390 a day stipend in his role as acting superintendent. In recent years, large districts statewide, including Urbana in 2019, have paid interim leaders $1,200 a day. And while JG Consulting has advised the district it would charge extra to assist in identifying an interim leader, Arnold said the firm wouldn't go to great lengths in that effort. It would likely involve the board being given a list of retired superintendents now working as consultants. The search itself is free, but the cost would be quite a bit more from our district, or for our district, to hire these people, said Arnold, who also praised the job Casillas has done. Among King's counterarguments, we should have a process. We should also see an application, a CV, a cover letter, a vision statement, a statement of equity and diversity. These are things that are expected in any position, in particular the leader of our district. If we go through that process and Mr. Casillas is the best candidate, I would be very much for that. Barring a special meeting being added to the calendar, the soonest the board could vote on a contract with JG Consulting would be August 11th. At Monday's meeting, the board gave its authorization to prepare a contract with the winning firm. Seven responded to Unit 4's request for proposals. Hazard Young Atiyah, the Illinois Association of School Boards, McPherson and Jacobson, MGT, Ray and Associates, School Execs Connect, and the minority-owned JG Consulting, which was very impressive in its presentation and interview, Arnold said, and offered the transparency, inclusion, data-driven approach, and community outreach Hendricks said he was looking for. The next headline reads, Vermilion County Courts, little new in status hearing on Danville Correctional Center, firing range. This article is written by Jennifer Bailey and is based in out of Danville. You can reach Jennifer through email at jbaily@newsgazette.com. A status hearing Monday morning in the case of vacating the permanent injunction for the closed Danville Correctional Center firing range resulted in little new information. Assistant Attorney General Julie Themer, T-H-E-M-E-R, on Zoom, stated she expected to file a case management order on Monday for upcoming deadlines. Dates have not been set yet for a final evidentiary hearing, pre-trial or trial. Vermilion County Circuit Court Judge Nicholas Beaulieu, Themer and attorneys for Seven Point Cannabis Dispensary and Record Store and Auto Zone Distribution Center, which along with Cresco Labs, which owns Sunnyside Cannabis Dispensary in Danville, are part of the litigation to prevent the reopening of the firing range, and they didn't set a new status hearing. Themer previously said she doesn't anticipate filing any replies to the objections in lifting the permanent injunction on the state prison firing range due to Beaulieu, previously stating that whether it will be upheld or dissolved will be based on testimony. Representatives for businesses near the correctional center are concerned if the injunction which closed the firing range decades ago is lifted. They've stated that stray bullets could occur and business operations will be negatively impacted. The Danville City Council also approved a resolution opposing the reopening of the firing range. Local union officials with the Correctional Center have said at Council and Vermilion Advantage meetings that guards at the Danville prison must be present 2 hours away to Robinson for gun, or must be sent 2 hours away to Robinson for gun training, which costs more and can be a burden on safety at the Danville facility. They also say the noise and disruptions shouldn't be an issue for local businesses and visitors. The firing range has been closed since August 1988, when a Vermilion County judge issued the permanent injunction against it. Illinois Department of Corrections officials have declined a comment due to the ongoing litigation. And there's one photo that accompanies this article. It's just an exterior photo of a large building. And it's actually the courthouse, Vermilion County Courthouse. The caption reads, "The Vermilion County Courthouse in Danville." And that photo is provided by Jennifer Bailey of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, from front page of the newspaper and writer Bob Asmussen, "Home Court Advantage, Five Things UI Athletics Joining Forces for Event." This article is based out of Champaign. More than a month before the start of the 2025-2026 season, Illinois women's basketball coach Shauna Green will be working at a familiar building, her home court, State Farm Center. But there will be no balls or refs or baskets within sight, just a stage and a microphone. Green, the person responsible for revitalizing the Illinois program, is one of the featured speakers at the upcoming Five Things event, called the Women in Sports Special Edition. The show is set for 5:30 p.m. September 18th. Tickets, which cost $76.54, are available at the Five Things website. And their URL or their link is Five Things, so the number five, and then THINGS.net. The building holds more than 16,000 for basketball games, so it has room. Some of the suites in the arena are available for purchase and seat 16. Organizers suggested the opportunity for complementary companies to go in together on a suite. The show runs about 3 hours, which includes time for a break. Announced speakers include Green, Illinois softball coach Tyra Perry, and assistant volleyball coach Jen Tomas. Others will be announced closer to the date. The local Five Things is the brainchild of area attorney Brooke Starks and financial advisor Carrie Eisenmenger. The longtime pals started Five Things in 2018 and have held two or three events every year since. This will be the 16th edition. They are both quick to praise Jennifer Watson, who helps the organization with marketing. Her business is Jen Watson Consulting. At their most recent event in February, they hinted about what might happen next. Stephanie C., S-E-A-Y, of Heartland Coca-Cola, a longtime supporter of Five Things, wanted to be part of it as a sponsor. "The move to State Farm Center is a chance, or a change, excuse me, for Five Things, which has been held in smaller venues in the past. It's a similar concept, similar format, but on a much grander scale with a different audience, we hope," Starks said. The September show is a cooperative effort between Five Things and the University of Illinois Athletic Department. Sarah Burton, the U of I Chief Sports Officer and Senior Woman Administrator, is a fan of the Five Things program. "How did the relationship between Five Things and U of I Athletics develop? I think we have to credit Sarah Burton and Athletics," Stark said. "Sarah and a small group attended one of Five Things events. We had a great time," Burton said. The conversation between the two groups grew from there. "It was, how can we create more opportunities to do things together?" Stark said. "We're looking at women's athletics at the university and our audience of women in business who are motivated to make connections and network and promote other women. How can we marry those two things together and do some good work in the community? We always talk in corporate in America, we need women supporting women," Eisenmenger said. "That's the whole concept. We're kind of fighting the same battles, and we're looking for the same opportunities." Entering her ninth year on the Illinois staff, Burton has watched the rise of the women's basketball program under former University of Dayton coach Green. "We've seen our crowds grow significantly with Shauna's leadership and what our team has done," Burton said. "And we also look at a lot of peer programs in the conference. We still have some work to do to catch up to those crowds. We want to continue to find ways to network and build that community." The U of I Athletics executive team liked the idea of collaboration with Five Things. "It's a remarkable experience for women in this community to be a part of. and I think it's transformative in nature, Burton said. When it came time to pick the venue, multiple options were considered before State Farm Center became the choice. We don't need all of State Farm to make this a successful event, but we can make it an intimate event in that space and utilize some things that we felt could be or would be mutually beneficial, Burton said. Such as, some of the suites for the Five Things sponsor, she said. But also, it provides a great stage and one of the venues we ultimately want people to return back to on the women's side. That's our focus. The Traditions Club space and seats in front of that will serve as the venue. The crowd will dictate how much space is needed. If it's 200 people or 2,000 people, that's a success, Burton said. Is it a one-time appearance at the center? To be determined. I think we're all curious to see what happens, Stark said. I think we are optimistic about where this goes again because of the overlap in our communities. If you go, the September event will stay with the general format of five things, which means five speakers who each provide five tangible takeaways. We want them to drop some advice on us that we can implement tomorrow, Stark said. There is food and drinks, time to socialize and network. We want people to create connections, Stark said. That is the spirit of five things. For the upcoming edition, the speakers are the largest draw. Eisenmenger said Five Things wants the speakers to come as themselves. We try to strip away the title. The audience will see the speakers outside their usual work environments, off the field or court. There's less formality to this, Burton said. Green, who is always adept with the media, is a natural for five things. She's one of the most authentic women I know, Burton said. She'll be very comfortable showing up as herself. Filling a need. That's what Eisenmenger and Starks are trying to do with five things. You can show up differently when you're surrounded by a group of people who are thinking about the same things, dealing with some of the same battles, wear all the same hats, she said. It doesn't feel like there's a competition between the women's groups that we have in our community. I think the women of Champaign County show up and support one another. I don't think there's been a saturation of this type of information in the area or in the country, Stark said. It's hot. And when we blend it with what's happening with women's athletics, not just throughout the country, but around the globe, there's a renewed interest in propelling women's issues forward. It's never been a better time for women, yet there's still work to do. And there's two photographs that accompany this article. One is of some people sitting in chairs in a small circle talking to each other. The caption reads, News Gazette columnist Bob Asmussen at the right talks with from left, University of Illinois Athletics Administrator Sarah Burton, and Five Things creators Carrie Eisenmenger and Brooke Starks. That photo is provided. And there's one from the front page of the newspaper. It's of two women nicely dressed in front of a U of I flag or banner in the background. That caption reads, which is also provided, Five Things creators Brooke Starks on the left and Carrie Eisenmenger on the right are taking their event to the State Farm Center on the University of Illinois campus. It is scheduled for September 18th, and will feature women's basketball coach Shauna Green and others. Again, this article was written by Bob Asmussen, and he is, let me give you some information about him quickly at the end of this article. He is a college football reporter and columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached by phone or email. His phone number is 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248, and his email address is Asmussen, Asmussen, at newsgazette.com. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, July 29th, 2025. I'll be back to read part two with you shortly. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.